I grew up with parents who were reasonable, loving people, but who were also more than a little paranoid when it came to the internet. Anything that allowed anonymous communication in any form was banned, point blank, from the household. Even Club Penguin wasn't allowed because you could chat in it. Naturally, when I got my first laptop at 12, it was a piece of crap, gotten only because of all my homework that year was online. The first thing I did was start trying to talk to people online. I wasn't going in chat rooms or anything, because my parents' warnings still resonated with me, but I wasn't avoiding contact either. I ended up making a DeviantArt account. I know, cringe, where I didn't do much posting as I lack artistic talent. In spite of this, however, I was contacted via private message by a guy who I'll call Joker because his profile picture was of the Joker. That should have been a warning sign in and of itself, honestly. Joker just started talking to me out of the blue. I think I'd commented on one of his pieces or something, and he reached out to me to thank me for my kind words. We started talking. It turned out we had a lot of common interests. We played some of the same games, liked some of the same cartoons, etc. He seemed like a really, really nice guy. I think it was maybe a week or two and that the first uncomfortable thing happened, even if I didn't exactly think much of it at the time. The two of us shared a somewhat misanthropic view of the world, so there were a lot of dark jokes passed back and forth between us. Sometime about a week after we first started messaging, he casually mentions thinking that the world would be better off without him. I sent him a sad face and assured him that it wouldn't, as I quite liked talking to him. He didn't say anything more about it then, so I assumed that was it. It wasn't. Joker talked about suicide a lot. His talking about it quickly morphed from passing commentary to long, graphic rants about how much he hated himself and wanted to die, and what method would be best for him to do so. I spent hours talking him down over chat, terrified that one day I wouldn't be able to do enough and he'd actually do it. His messages started to get creepy in a different way. He started telling me how grateful he was to have me, how no one had ever cared about him as much as I did, how important I was to him, how he couldn't live without me, how he'd just die if he were to ever lose me. He was obsessed. Well, one day, a couple months in, my laptop breaks. It wasn't too bad, but it still took a couple of days before everything was back in working order. I logged back into DeviantArt to find dozens of messages, all from Joker. They started off normal enough, but quickly became frantic after I didn't respond. The last message he had sent was along the lines of, "I can't take this anymore," followed by a link to a picture image. The image was a pair of slit wrists. The cuts were deep and fairly fresh looking too, with red inflamed edges and the beginnings of an ugly scabbing just beginning to settle over the top. I was horrified. I quickly messaged him back, terrified I'd just lost a friend, and he responded. "I thought I'd lost you," he said. "I thought you'd left me. I couldn't handle the pain without you. Don't ever do that to me again." I said I wouldn't, and he seemed relieved. He only got worse from then on. It reached a point where practically our every conversation consisted of him either professing his obsession with me, threatening suicide, or both. The stress was keeping me up at night. I was terrified that one day soon I'd open up the chat and see nothing. I was utterly convinced it was my job to keep this guy alive, and that I was failing miserably at it. Joker kept escalating, until one day, nearly a year in, he finally said something that frightened me so badly I had to leave. Joker started talking about how I was the last good person left on this miserable planet, and stuff like that. He waxed poetic about how much he wanted to kill himself, and said that he'd finally found a way to truly be happy. He said the only way he'd ever be able to find happiness was in killing himself and taking me with him. That way, we would always be together, free from the cruel weight of the world. He started going into very detailed, very graphic descriptions of how he'd kill me. A lot of them involved carving out my heart, then clutching it to his chest and laying beside me as he took his own life too. I was terrified, enough so that I did what I should have done a long time ago and deleted that account. For years following that incident, I never spoke to anyone online. Even to this day, actually, there's still a lingering sense of dread when it comes to online interaction. So, to the boy who I thought was my first internet friend, I don't know what your deal was, whether you were mentally ill or purposely malicious or some combination of the two. But whatever the case may have been, let's not meet.
My fiancé, Jocelyn, has always been a thrill seeker. This year, with only 2 months to go before the big wedding day, I decided to surprise her with a trip out on water. We've always said that we wanted to do something this crazy, and I guess I figure, why wait another minute? As we got out beyond the shallows, I was already feeling sweaty and nervous. I made one final FaceTime call to my mom and showed her how safe we were being.
Derek, this is not just insane. It's downright stupid. No matter how many precautions you take, you can't guarantee that something will not go wrong.
I told her that I had read every online review about the service we rented and weighed my options carefully. Heck, Jocelyn was even thinking we should have living wills if something horrible did happen. But I try not to live with fear in my life, so I didn't want to dwell on constantly wondering what could happen.
Everything will be fine, and I will call you back in about an hour or so, I reassured her just as the signal on my phone got choppy.
It was the point of no return. She tried again to talk me out of it, but the phone went into a dead zone. Jocelyn was about to say we should turn around when the boat came to a stop and our driver announced that we had arrived. I looked out at the calm waters, amazed that there would be man-eating predators below us in only a few moments. Speaking in broken English, the captain of the ship told us to get our gear on. Meanwhile, the driver prepped the bait they were going to use to lure the sharks. We hurried to the dressing room.
We don't have to do this, you know. I don't care if we wind up losing the deposit, I told Jocelyn. She was shaking. Nerves, I guess, as I placed the scuba gear on my skin. It was tight and firm, meant to protect me as best as possible in the icy water should things go wrong.
The driver told us that we would have 35 minutes to be under the water with the sharks, and they performed a final check on the cage as we walked back out on deck. Jocelyn squeezed my hand and we kissed before putting our headgear on and making sure the oxygen tanks were secure. Everything was designed for us to enjoy this once-in-a-lifetime experience. It would be a dream come true. But soon, it became a nightmare. Stepping into the cage, we were told to move to the left side and watched as the driver securely closed the gate. There was a small hole where we could use our diving photography gear to take pictures in the cage, but seeing that it was large enough for our arms to go through terrified me. As soon as the water hit me, my body tensed up and I started to feel adrenaline flowing through me. The ocean was so calm and empty. I didn't see anything for miles in any direction. What if no shark came? When we were completely under, we heard the foghorn of the ship and the chum hit the water. Slowly, the water formed a reddish and brownish hue as the guts of the fish gently settled in front of our vision. Jocelyn and I stood side by side and watched the edge of the now murky waters as we saw silhouettes appear from the fringe. As expected, the sharks were here. I reminded myself that we would be okay as long as we didn't panic, but that didn't keep me from getting even more tense as dozens of sharks soon appeared and began to swim toward the cage. Most were tiger sharks, but there were a few larger varieties as well, all grabbing and chomping on the bait as Jocelyn nudged me to ready the photography. I hated the fact that I was going to be the one to take the shot, but it was too late to back out now, so she stood behind me as I got into position. Gingerly, I placed my arm near the opening in the cage and clenched my teeth on my mouthpiece as a larger great white swam right next to the cage. It made me scream inside my head. Placing the camera near to my helmet, I got a few steady shots, the cage rocking as the sharks became a bit more aggressive. I felt Jocelyn press up against my backside and tried to push her away. I was already close enough to the cage wall. Then one of the sharks reacted to the underwater flash and slammed against the bars. The camera dislodged from my hand and drifted out into the open water, only a few yards, but still exposing me if I reached for it. Jocelyn urged me to try, but I was frozen with fear. The sharks were moving faster, and every time they got by me, I could swear that their ferocious eyes were staring into my soul. Then something happened that changed my life forever. Jocelyn pushed me toward the open hole, my arm dangling from the cage.
In that instant, I felt something prick at the edge of my leg. It felt like a blade, and I looked down and saw blood floating from the hole in my suit. I turned to look at Jocelyn, trying to figure out why she was doing this. Then I saw a fire in her eyes that made me freeze in horror again. And I saw a small pocket knife resting in her other hand as she held me against the cage wall. As the blood hit the water near me, it had the effect you would expect. The sharks went wild. One of them grabbed at my arm and snapped it backward. I felt my bone shatter as I was yanked toward the ocean. Jocelyn kept me against the wall as the sharks kept ravaging my arm, every fiber of my being trying to find a way to fight this. They were on me from all sides, grabbing at my flesh, the water getting bloodier by the second, my whole body shaking in agony as I wailed against her. I looked at the cage door, an insane idea hitting me. I didn't know any other way to survive. I reached down and grabbed the latch, and the cage door floated open. Because of the pressure she exerted on me, Jocelyn tumbled out. I held onto the cage door and forced her past me into the swarm of sharks. I was almost backing out as I forced the door shut and pulled my broken arm into the cage. I watched in front of my eyes as the sharks surrounded my fiancé and tore her limb from limb. The boat hastily pulled me up, realizing the emergency. As soon as I was out of the water, the driver hurried to the cage and screamed in a panic at the injury to my arm.
"Where is the other? The lady? Where is she?"
they asked me frantically. I was too busy trying not to bleed out, and then I fell unconscious. I woke up in a hospital bed about 2 hours later. My arm was amputated. They told me that Jocelyn had survived as well, but suffered even worse injuries than me. I called my mother immediately, and she was filled with tears as I recounted the story. "Jocelyn tried to kill me, Mom. Why would she do that?" I asked, but she didn't have an answer, and I never got one. I signed out of the hospital the next day, my entire life altered by a woman I thought I would spend forever with. I visited her before I left, though. The doctor said she was conscious enough to hear me.
"I survived," I whispered in triumph. I doubt any authority would believe that she tried to kill me, but I didn't care. We were through.
I'll have to figure out a way to adapt to this new life, but it will be worth it, because a broken heart is not the worst that could have happened.
I will never forget the day I found out I was pregnant. We had been trying for years and thought it was never going to happen, so when the second line showed up on that pregnancy test, I couldn't believe my eyes. I even made my husband run out and buy two more just to make sure. All three came out positive. Finally, this was the last piece in our puzzle we were waiting for. It was like a dream come true. We were already married and living in our dream home with a big back garden that was perfect for adventurous kids. In the middle of the garden, there was an old oak tree that they could climb. One of the first things we did was put up a tire swing on it. We knew it would be years before he would be able to use it, but with the thoughts of a little one running around, we just couldn't wait. We had to do something. My husband was like a big kid himself. He wouldn't shut up about all the adventures he was going to take him on, even though I explained to him repeatedly that it would be a few years before the baby would be able to do things like that. I just think he was happy to finally have someone to play with and forgot all about the baby stage. Until Harry arrived. Don't get me wrong, he was a good husband and dad. He did a lot for me during the pregnancy. When Harry was born, I needed an emergency C-section and there were complications. It took a while to recover from it. So for the first few months after Harry came home, Dan did nearly everything for him. From night feeds to changing diapers, which must have been hard, he is one of the most impatient people I know, so it was a bit of a challenge. It took a little bit of time for us both to adjust, I suppose. There were plenty of stressful days and sleepless nights too, but when I was back on my feet, we managed to get into our own rhythm. After that, everything went smoothly for us. Well, as smooth as it can be with a new baby in the house, I mean. I think he was almost 3 months old when I first noticed something odd. I was holding him in my arms while feeding him and staring into his beautiful blue eyes as usual, when suddenly he stopped feeding and just started staring at me with this strange look in his eyes, kinda like he was angry with me. I assumed it was just gas and put him on my shoulder to burp him. What happened next, I swear to you, is true. I was rubbing his back when he moved suddenly and slipped off my shoulder. Luckily, I caught him before he fell, but unfortunately, I pinched him with my nails in the process. He didn't cry or anything, he just made a growling noise. I give him a hug and a kiss before putting him back up on my shoulder. A few seconds later, I heard him whisper something in my ear. It sounded like cunt. I just laughed. It had to be one of his little baby noises, I thought, and continued rubbing his back. Not long after, I heard it again. Cunt. This time it was loud and clear. I put him sitting on my knee and repeated, "Did you say a bad word, cutie? Did you? Did you?" jokingly in my usual silly voice. He stared into my eyes without breaking eye contact or even blinking with a strange look I had not seen before for about 5 minutes. I thought he might still have had some gas, so I put him back up on my shoulder and started rubbing his back with my hand. He started pushing his head closer and closer to my face, until he was near my ear. Then suddenly he grabbed onto one of my earrings with his mouth and started shaking his head. I tried to pull him away, but he would not let go. It was so painful, I thought he was going to rip it off my ear. But luckily I managed to open it before he got the chance. When I put him sitting back down on my knee, he spit it out and hit me on the side of the face, then smirked at me with this creepy grin. At the time, I thought it was just one big coincidence. I could never imagine he could have hurt anyone on purpose. How could I? He was only a baby. When my husband got home, I told him what had happened, and we both had a good laugh about it, but I never wore earrings around him again. The rest of that night was uneventful. It was my husband's turn to get up with him, so it was the next morning after my husband went to work before I was alone with Harry again. It was also the last day of my parental leave, so I was going to try to make the most of it and bring him to the park. He loved looking at the ducks. Before I left, I decided to change his diaper. He was not happy about it. When I tried to undress him, he kept kicking me unusually hard. I didn't know what was wrong with him. I had never seen him like that before. When I finally got him fully dressed, he gave me the finger. I know what you think, just baby stuff. Well, that's what I thought at the time. Even though he looked into my eyes while grinding his, I would say teeth, but he didn't have any, for the rest of the day, he did not look at me once, not even when I fed him. That night, it was my turn to get up and feed him, but I had trouble sleeping. I think I was just stressed with the thoughts of going back to work after that long break. I was just lying there when I heard something on the baby monitor. It sounded like someone muttering to themselves. I thought maybe our lines got crossed and we were picking up someone else's monitor, but I got up and checked on him to make sure. I sneaked quietly down the hallway so not to wake him and looked in through the crack in the partially open door. I was shocked with what I saw. He was sitting up looking around. I was amazed. He was not supposed to be able to do that for another few months, so I ran up and got my phone to record him. On my way back down, he screamed and frightened me. It was so loud I thought there must have been something seriously wrong with him. When I got there, I found him lying on the floor just inside the door. He had made so much noise he woke up my husband. He found me standing over Harry and thought I had dropped him. I tried to tell him I found him like that, but he just would not believe me. When my husband put him up on his shoulder to console him, Harry smiled over at me with, I know this sounds weird to say about a baby, but with a smug look on his face. After that, things went downhill for me. It seemed like any time I was near him, there were problems. From screaming when I touched him when my husband was around, to pinching, scraping, or throwing things at me when we were all alone. I'm sure my husband thought I was hurting Harry on purpose, but he didn't say it to me. But he was always looking over my shoulder any time I was near the baby. I tried my best to improve my relationship with him, but it was hard. I worked long hours, and he was usually in bed when I got home. The only time I got to spend with him was on the weekends. Even then, it might only be for a few hours, and I practically spent no time alone with him. Eventually, I felt like I had no choice but to take a step back from my responsibilities at work, which meant a demotion and a sufficient salary reduction. But at least I would get home at a reasonable hour. My husband was very supportive of my decision. He said he was just happy we would be able to spend more time together, which was nice to hear. For the first few weeks, everything couldn't have gone better. We were finally able to do things as a family. I even started to believe Harry was starting to warm up to me. He still looked like he was disgusted by me and tried to avoid eye contact, but at least he wasn't acting out when I wasn't near him anymore. Things were going good until a few weeks ago. My husband bought a new baby monitor with a camera. The other one mysteriously disappeared one night after putting Harry to bed. I really liked it. I was able to watch him sleep and got into the habit of watching the monitor every night before I fell asleep. Somehow, I think he knew, and he didn't like it. He started sitting up in his cot staring into the camera until I fell asleep. Anytime I tried to show my husband what he was doing, Harry would just fall back and pretend he was asleep before he got a chance to see him. The more I watched, the more it started to creep me out. It was like he could see me. I often dozed off. When I woke, I would see him scanning the room as if he were looking for something. Then he would quickly turn to the camera again and stare at me until I fell asleep. I always thought me and Harry's problems were caused by us not bonding properly when we came home from the hospital, and all the weird things that happened were just in my head, but I was wrong. Last night I woke to the sound of Harry laughing. When I checked the monitor, he wasn't in his cot. I tried to call my husband, but no matter what I did, he wouldn't wake up. I ran down and checked every part of his room, but he was not there. I was really beginning to worry at this stage. I was ready to call the police, when I thought I heard a noise downstairs, but he wasn't there. So I ran back up in a panic to get my phone. Then I heard what sounded like mumbling. It seemed like it was coming from my room. When I opened the door, I was horrified with what I saw. Harry was sitting on my husband's chest with his hands over his mouth chanting. My husband's legs were shaking and he was struggling to breathe. I panicked and pushed Harry onto the bed and started doing CPR. The whole time, Harry laughed hysterically. For nearly 10 minutes, I did everything I could to save him, but nothing I did was working. I thought he was going to die. I was so scared. By the time the paramedics got there, he had stopped moving altogether. They got to work on him straight away and found a pacifier wedged deep in his throat. Luckily, they got it out just in time. They said if I didn't do CPR, he wouldn't have made it. Thank God he's going to be okay, but he will be kept in for a few days. The problem is now I'm stuck at home with Harry, and I'm afraid of what he will do to me. My husband and I have the best relationship. We've been married for 24 years and counting. He still makes breakfast for me every day, and I still tell him I love him every night. We have our divergences, but we work through them as a couple, as a team. It wasn't always like that, though. We met almost 30 years ago. I was 19, he was 21. We were madly in love from the start. So much that I thought it would be fitting to change our wedding vows from "till death do you part" to "for eternity." After we had been married for around a year, we started trying for a baby. We tried and tried until we learned we couldn't have children. My uterus was the wrong shape, according to the doctor. As in many other cases, this put a strain on our relationship. The stress and resentment started to build up on both ends, and we started fighting a lot. First came some small disagreements, then they started growing and growing. By the end, every small thing would end up in a screaming match. One day, I was doing my stuff around the house and needed to pee. In a hurry, I sat on the toilet without looking. I gasped in horror as my body sank and my butt touched the porcelain inside. I got up and saw the seat was up. I marched to my husband and started yelling at him. "Can't you just leave the seat down? Are you that much of a baby?" He opened his mouth to answer me, but he just closed it back, closed his eyes, and sighed. "I need some time alone." With that, he went for the door and left in his car. That night, the police came to my door, telling me he had been in an accident. They said he was at the hospital in critical condition and that I should go there as soon as possible. I could not bear my regret. I started sobbing and asked the officers if they could take me there. I was in no condition to drive. They looked at each other and the one by my doorstep said, "Ma'am, this is not standard procedure, but sure, we'll give you a ride." From then on, my memory is patchy. I read that's a normal response to trauma. I remember the doctor saying they weren't sure he was going to make it. I remember seeing him hooked to all the life support machines at the hospital. Next thing I remember is him at home already. The accident left him on a wheelchair. Because of that, I was now mostly in charge of everything, but he still tried to help. 2 or 3 days after he came home, I remember him saying, "I want to clean the life, and you are my life." From then on, we realized our problems were tiny compared to losing each other, and our fight stopped. We still have disagreements, but we talk about them as a couple. Because of all the trauma and being on a wheelchair, he didn't want to leave the house ever since. I respected his will for years, but at this point, I felt like he really needed to go out. So I booked a surprise vacation for us at a place that is accessible for wheelchairs.
Today I was looking for the reservation papers. I'm a bit messy and I lose stuff easily. And I looked in a drawer that I rarely use. I found a paper and checked if it was it. Right now I'm packing. I'm not sure where I'll go, but I'll go alone. My husband asked from the kitchen, "Baby, what are you up to?" And I replied, "Just tidying up the wardrobes." I can't let him know. I mean, how do you tell someone you found their death certificate?
We live a normal life. We have a beautiful little 2-year-old baby girl. Yeah, we're both pretty weird and love paranormal everything, and are pretty alternative in style. But in this day and age, that's normal. Today was a typical day. Hubby kissed me and the baby goodbye this morning and left like he does every morning. Me and the baby go about our day playing and cleaning. We even decide to make daddy's favorite dinner. He gets out at 6 p.m. and it takes him about 15 minutes to drive home. He usually calls me and we talk until he drives up. But today at 6 o'clock, almost on the dot, my doorbell rings. I peek and I see it's my husband. I open the door and greet him, telling him I didn't expect to see him so soon since he didn't call. He says, "Oh, I guess I forgot, honey." When he spoke, my skin crawled. I instantly noticed something was off about him. He was making me feel like he was a crooked painting on the wall. Unnerving. Not to mention, in our entire 5-year relationship, he's never called me honey. I'm just being paranoid, because the night before we had watched Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and sometimes movies like that make me question my reality. "Can you let me in, babe?" he says, breaking my thought. "Sorry, babe." I open the door and he walks in. Instead of going to his usual chair to take off his work boots, he goes to the couch, which is weird. The baby runs out of her play area to do her and her daddy's little love game they do when he gets home. But when she gets 4 feet from him, she stopped and runs to my side. "Say hi to daddy, sweetie." She hesitates and looks at me, but eventually says, "Hi, daddy." He says nothing to her, just waves at her. "We made your favorite dinner, babe." I look at him with a smile. "Oh, what is it?" My husband is a big boy. He loves his food, and we both know his favorite dinner is meatloaf and my special mac and cheese. And my baby has never once reacted to her own daddy like that. I mean, they're best friends, for God's sake. She waits all day to see her daddy. I put the baby in the high chair to eat, and I sit down next to her. He stays sitting on the couch, just sitting there with a resting smile, staring at the blank TV. I start analyzing him from my seat. Were his eyes always that dark? Was that what he was wearing when he left this morning? "Where's your keys, babe?" I asked him. "In my pocket," he replied. "Then why did you ring the doorbell instead of just coming in?" "I must have left them here." My mind starts railing. This isn't my fucking husband, bro. I don't know who this motherfucker is, but it's not the father of my child. I tell the baby that we have to go to sleep early because we have to go to grandma's in the morning, even though that wasn't true. I scooped her up and sheepishly walked past him to get to my bedroom. "Good night, girls," he says as we pass. Once I get out of his line of sight, I bolt down the hallway into my room and lock the door. The baby and I are watching a movie now. I just texted my husband's phone and say I love you just to see if he responds. Husband texts back, "I love you too, baby. Daddy will be home soon. We just had a lot of extra stuff to move over here. Give Bubby a kiss for me." I freeze as the realization of something pretending to be my husband is in my house. I'm in a room with no protection, with my precious baby, and the only thing separating us and whatever that is a 1-inch thick flimsy door fully sets in. I texted him back, explaining somewhat that there's someone in the house and I can't call 911 for fear of him hearing me. It's currently 6:45 p.m. and I can hear police sirens coming closer, but I see him. I see his feet under the crack of the door. All I can do is sit in the furthest corner of the room behind my dresser with my sleeping child on my lap and pray that the cops get here before it decides it's going to do whatever it came here to do.